Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Senator John Thune and Mike Rounds are rallying behind a new farm bill that passed yesterday in the U.S. Senate. Thune, a member of the Senate Ag Committee, says input from the state's farmers and ranchers helped craft the bill that passed by a vote of 87 to 13. That's at the top of the agenda for our Dakota political junkies. Joining us today from the Tom and Danielle Ammon Foundation studio in Aberdeen is John Schaff. He's professor of political science and department chair at Northern State. Welcome back, Professor Schaff.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us by phone, Roger Whittle, managing editor at the Watertown Public Opinion. Roger, welcome.
Thanks, Lori.
Let's start with you, Roger, as we talk about a farm bill. Pretty important to South Dakotans. A bipartisan bill passes the Senate. Put it in perspective for folks as far as how significant this has been as a news story in 2018.
It's been a big one. You know, they're having a harder and harder time passing farm bills, it seems like, every year. This time, the Senate and House came up with some vastly different measures. And when they finally agreed on one to vote on, I believe it was a lot of things that the controversial things that the House put in the bill were left out of the final version, which was they wanted a work requirement for food stamps, and they also wanted some pretty major cuts in some conservation programs. Both of those were left out of the bill that the Senate easily passed, so it'll be interesting to see how the House handles it, and I think they're expected to vote probably maybe today yet.
All right. And John, talk a little bit about sort of the political victory it is for South Dakota if something like this passes, and perhaps the troubles if it doesn't and farmers have to deal in this season of tariffs with even more uncertainty.
Well, I think that there's a lot of anxiety amongst the agricultural community. The farmers I talk to tell me that if we had one more year like this year, it might be the 1980s all over again, and that would be bad memories for those whose agricultural memories stretch back that far. And so in that sense, this is another victory. You know, in the last, 48 hours or so, there are rumors that the Chinese are going to start buying American soybeans again, and that would be good for South Dakota agriculture. And I think that this farm bill is, too, even though there is some controversy, mostly over the SNAP funding, which is a majority, oddly, of the farm bill is mostly what we used to call food stamps, the SNAP program. But there's a lot in there for conservation. And you see this battle between the House and the Senate, with the Senate has tended to look at the farm bill more as a sort of constituency service, and the House has been more likely to look at the farm bill as an opportunity for attacking the deficit and for cuts. And in this case, it seems like the Senate has won almost every battle on that count.
Hmm. Roger, when we talked with Dusty Johnson before he was elected, right prior to Election Day, we asked him about the farm bill, and he said he didn't necessarily agree with he wanted stricter work requirements for SNAP benefits, but he also wasn't going to lay the farm bill on the floor and throw it out because of it. So it sounds like, if he's true to that word, that he would vote for this, perhaps. What do you think, as we move to the House, we can expect from South Dakota's newest congressman, Roger?
Well, if they vote today, he won't get to vote on it, right?
Explain that. Is he?
Well, he hasn't taken office yet.
See? Now, there we go. Whoops. You're right.
I think it's still Christie would vote. And I haven't heard if she's back in Washington voting for it or not. But
Well, there's something to watch there. I got a little confused there with my time frame. I'm already looking ahead to January. And
you had me confused and thinking that I'd fallen asleep.
No,
for a few
thanks.
Weeks.
Thanks for clarifying that. But it is what he said. I haven't heard anything from Congresswoman Noem as far as what her thoughts were on it. I guess the same question.
She's kind of busy these days.
Right. You need her to show up and vote for it, though, right?
I would think so.
Or does it not matter at this point because she's going to be governor, and whether she shows up and votes for the U.S. Farm Bill is insignificant?
Oh, I don't think that's true at all. I think she was part of the crafting of this farm bill, and I would think she would want to be there to vote.
Yeah.
I think South Dakotans would want their representative to be there for the vote anyway. So,
yeah. One of the provisions, industrial hemp being labeled as a crop. And John Schaff, that's sort of a big news as well. Do you think that news affects South Dakota?
Not being an agronomist, I have no idea what kind of climate or soil it takes to grow hemp. Assuming you can grow it in South Dakota, and I'm going to assume that you can, you know, I think we're always looking for ways to diversify our agricultural products. And as I understand it, this is something that people look at as being like something like a $20 billion industry. And so it can't hurt that we're always looking for different ways we can use land, different as people rotate crops, different crops that they can use. And so I said this is another of many provisions in this bill that I think are beneficial to the state, which is why both of our senators voted for it. And in a press release, Dusty Johnson did say that if he was in the House, he would have voted for this. Although I think we're all sort of in the dark as to what Kristi Noem is going to. I got to be honest. I'm not even sure if she's in Washington D.C. right now. What she's up to. But there's been sort of silence from the Noem camp. But our incoming representative, I think, has said in a press release that he supports this deal and he would be for it. And hemp, I would imagine, would be one of many things that would be part of why our delegation is supportive of this bill.
Yeah, thanks for that, John. And then, Roger, big increases for high-speed internet in rural communities as well, tucked in to that farm bill. That seems like a pretty significant win for South Dakotans as well.
It does. Very, very important, especially with the onset of I can't think of the frame now. The new agriculture that they're pushing that is done over internet with acre by acre
precision ag.
That's it. There precision ag. Thank you. My LATI friends are going to be angry at me for not coming up with that word. But yes, very, very important. And I would also add about the hemp. I know North Dakota last year got a special dispensation from the federal government to have a pilot hemp program in that state. So I'm assuming that if they can grow it in North Dakota, we can grow it here, because really anything they can do, we can do better.
So. All right, true words.
True words never spoken.
And I say that as a former North Dakota resident.
Let's take a look at Governor-elect Kristi Noem and some of the news that's coming out of her campaign as she gets ready to make the transition from Congress to peer. And some of her new key staff hires have been announced, including her daughter, Kennedy Noem. So, John, tell us a little bit about, as we look at who she's bringing with her, what are some of the early indications of what kind of governor she'll be?
I think when we look at, you and I had this discussion three weeks ago on the Junkies, where it was much more preliminary. One of the things that I said is one of the things a governor or any executive is looking for is to surround themselves with people they know. And it seems like that's one thing she's doing. And leave aside her daughter, these are people that have some connection to her campaign or were staff members for her as a member of Congress. And also just a lot of people with the experience in the state. And so I think what it's telling us is that we're going to get a group of people that, A, have connections to Kristi Noem, who she's going to be personally comfortable with, but also I think people who know the state very well and who've got a lot of experience, some of them within state government, like, for example, the Office of Economic Development. These are people are going to be being her policy analysts and giving her policy advice are people who have a lot of experience in our government. And to the extent that Kristi Noem has been, of course, working on in national government for the last number of years, to the extent that she needs sort of a helping hand as she sort of gets up to speed on state issues. I don't think she needs a lot, but to the extent that she needs that, I think she's getting a lot of, if you will, kind of old hands or experienced hands working in her administration.
Hmm. Roger, some thoughts on some of those early names. Familiar names on that list for you?
Sure. For us, for me as a newspaper person, her press secretary and scheduler are the same, and that's a good thing. She has a great staff in Washington. Anytime we have to contact our lawmakers in Washington. You know, she's always her people are always the first to respond, and very good professional people, and we look forward to working with them for here in South Dakota. Otherwise, yeah, a lot of familiar names on here, state government veterans. I didn't think there were any surprises.
Right. Beth Hollitz of Watertown, is that a familiar name for you, Roger?
It wasn't until just recently. I'm going to have to give her a call and introduce myself.
Right. She was a key advisor on the campaign,
right.
And both campaigns for Congress and governor. So.
Right.
And she's the inauguration coordinator for the transition team. So I have no familiarity with her right now. And how about this conversation about Kennedy Noem, Roger? Because, it raised some eyebrows, and because she is Governor-elect Noem's daughter, concerns, or this is a situation of familiarity. What do you think?
Well, here's my thought. I'm usually very critical of things like this, but if the governor wants to hire her daughter to be on her staff, I really have no problem with that. President Trump hired many of his family members to be among his advisors, so I think yes, it raised a few eyebrows, but it'll blow over, and I'm sure eventually Kennedy will do a great job for her mother.
Yeah. John, talk a little bit about the opportunity here for a young Kennedy Noem to sort of land a job in the governor's, as a policy analyst this early in her career. What does it sort of say perhaps for her future?
Well, I noticed that she's a political science major, which, though she's at, if I may say, the wrong university, but in the right field. So she got that part. She got that part right. And so I think it shows that these are the kinds of things that people in our field, students in our field, can do. Policy analysis, getting into politics, working in state government. And what it tells me is that she's gotten a bug from her mother that she's interested in politics. Right? You know, Kristi Noem started as a political science major right here at Northern State University, though eventually, because I think her familial situation is well known, she ended up at SDSU and much later finally getting her political science degree. But it kind of shows that this sort of runs in the Noem family. And who knows what is in Kennedy Noem's future. Maybe this is an indication that a political career is in the offing for her as well.
Hmm. All right, and a little news from Sioux Falls as City Councilor Teresa Staley has looked at the numbers of how much it cost for city law enforcement to provide security for the presidential visit when Donald Trump came to visit. She thinks that Kristi Noem's campaign should reimburse the city for that. Roger, what do you make of this?
Yeah, apparently the numbers were that it cost the city of Sioux Falls $29,000 for all the special security and stuff they had to do for Trump's visit. And there are, a couple ways to look at this. When President Obama came to Watertown, I'm sure we spent at least that much, and we didn't ask the school to reimburse that I know of anyway. On the other hand, it was a private event, and the public wasn't available or wasn't allowed to be involved. So, the police are saying that they schedule, that they budget for these kind of events that require their presence, and they're not too worried about getting that back. So, flip a coin. I don't. I'm not going to hold it against the governor-elect for bringing the president to Sioux Falls and having the city of Sioux Falls incur a little bit of expense for that. And really, $29,000 in the city of Sioux Falls budget is the proverbial drop in the bucket.
Right, which is mostly overtime money, as I understand it.
Right. And they have overtime funds set up for just this kind of thing.
Right. John Schaff, any thoughts on that? Is that just a gesture from a council member to say, pay attention, folks, and speak out for her constituents, but really not much there? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I guess it would be nice if the Noem campaign paid back the city, but I don't see it as that big of a deal. Yeah, there's a distinction from when President Obama came to Watertown, and that this was a campaign event, not a presidential event. Though the problem is those things are hard to distinguish.
Right.
When is someone doing their private, or when is someone doing their job, and when are they campaigning for politicians? Those things are often the exact same thing. And yes, it was a private event. I guess maybe the nice thing would be for the Noam campaign to pay back, but it doesn't seem like, if anything, the city of Sioux Falls benefits when the president shows up, even if it's for an event like this, is that people come there. They probably got almost as much money in extra spending from all the people who came there and spent money as it did to incur the cost. And so it's probably a push. And so it strikes me as not being a crucial question. If this is what breaks the back of the city of Sioux Falls, they got bigger problems than and then the Noam campaign not paying them back.
Plus, do you think Kristi Noam raised enough money in her campaign to pay that $20,000 bill?
I think probably that night she did probably times some factor. She probably did. That's what I mean. Is that I'm sure the Noam campaign could cover this. And I guess that'd be a nice gesture, but it's not gonna affect the city, and it doesn't strike me as being a big deal.
Right. Let's talk a little bit here at the end about the budget address and any takeaways from that, Roger, as you sort of watched Governor Dugard giving his final address to lawmakers. We talked about it last week on the Junkies, but did you have anything you wanted to add to that conversation?
Only that, we've gotten very used to seeing Governor Dugard giving these speeches every year. And he's had some years when he's had difficult problems to face, and in years when he hasn't. So I was just enjoying this one as his farewell to the state, and I wasn't really paying much attention to this to the details of it. But he's been a great. I mean, in my opinion, I think he's been a great governor. He's a nice guy, and I wish him well.
Professor Schaff, how do you think he'll be remembered?
I think what Governor Dugard has been and what he talked about in that budget address is a good steward of the state dollar. And when you compare the state of South Dakota's fiscal situation, especially I'm a state employee, so I have a lot to say about what the governor said, but maybe I'll keep some of those opinions to myself. I would like a big raise this year.
Right.
But as a member of the South Dakota retirement system, our retirement system is the envy of the land, because South Dakota, as the governor says, we don't spend money we don't have, and we're extremely prudent how we spend our money. And I think we can have arguments about whether we should spend more money here or there, nuances with taxes. But on the whole, I'd rather be in South Dakota's fiscal situation than the fiscal situation of many other states in the union.